Chapter 7 Part 1 When I got home, I found Mrs. Dane Calthrop sitting talking to Joanna. She looked ill.
"This has been such a shock, Mr. Burton," she said. "Poor thing, poor thing."
"Yes," I said. "It's awful to think of someone being so unhappy that they take their own life."
"Oh, you mean Mrs. Symington?" she asked.
"Didn't you?" Mrs. Dane Calthrop shook her head.
"Of course I am sorry for her, but it was going to happen sometime, wasn't it?"
"Was it?"
said Joanna. Mrs. Dane Calthrop turned to her.
"Oh, I think so. If you think suicide is the best way to escape from trouble, then it doesn't much matter what the trouble is. She would have killed herself one day because she was that kind of woman. Although she always seemed rather selfish to me, as though her life was more important than other people's. But I'm beginning to understand how little I really know anyone."
"So, who were you talking about when you said, 'poor thing'?" I asked.
"The woman who wrote the letters, of course. Oh, think how unhappy someone must be to do that. How lonely. That's why I feel so upset. Somebody in this town has been filled with that terrible unhappiness, and I did not know about it. I should have known. Poor thing."
She got up to go. I felt unable to agree with her, so I asked, "Have you any idea who this woman is?"
"Well, I can guess, but then I might be wrong, mightn't I?"
She went quickly to the door, then turned.
"Why have you never married, Mr. Burton?"
From anyone else, this would have been rude. But with Mrs. Dane Calthrop, I felt that she really wanted to know. "Shall we say," I said, "because I have never met the right woman?"
"We can say so," said Mrs. Dane Calthrop. "But it wouldn't be a very good answer, because so many men have obviously married the wrong woman."
And then she left. Joanna said,
"I really do think she's mad, but I like her. The people in the village are afraid of her."
"So am I, a little."
"Do you really think whoever wrote these letters is very unhappy?"
Joanna asked. "I don't know what she's thinking or feeling, and I don't care. It's her victims I feel sorry for." It seems strange to me now that in our discussions about poison pen's state of mind, we missed the most obvious one. Griffith had thought she would be pleased with what she had done. I had thought she must be sorry. Mrs. Dane Calthrop had been certain that she was suffering. Yet the obvious reaction we did not consider was fear. Because with the death of Mrs. Symington, the position of the writer of the letters was much more serious. The police were now involved, so it was even more important for the anonymous writer to remain anonymous. And if fear was the main reaction of the writer, other things would naturally happen. Things that I did not think about either, yet they should have been obvious. Part 2 Joanna and I came down rather late to breakfast the next morning. That is to say, late for Limstock. And I was annoyed to see Amy Griffith standing on the doorstep talking to Megan. 9:30 is not the time for a morning call.
"Hello there, you lazy pair," she called.
I just wanted to ask Miss Burton if she had any vegetables she could give to our Red Cross sale. If so, I'll get Owen to call for them in the car. Megan came back into the house and went into the dining room. At that moment, the telephone rang, and I went into the hall to answer it. Yes, I said. The noise of deep breathing came from the other end, and a female voice said,
Oh.
Yes, I said again.
Oh, said the voice again. Is it Little Furs?
This is Little Furs.
Oh,
the voice said once more, then asked,
Could I speak to Miss Partridge for a minute?
Certainly, I said. Who shall I say?
Oh, tell her it's Agnes, would you? Agnes Waddle.
I put down the telephone and called up the stairs. Partridge! Agnes Waddle wants to speak to you. Partridge appeared with a brush in her hand.
Agnes Waddle? Whatever can she want now?
She put down her brush and came down the stairs looking very angry. I escaped into the dining room, where Megan was eating bacon and eggs alone. So I opened the morning newspaper, and a little later Joanna entered.
Phew, she said. Is it true that there are no green beans at this time of year?
August, said Megan, and got up and went out of the French doors onto the veranda.
Well, one has them any time in London, said Joanna.
When I had finished my breakfast, I followed Megan outside. Standing on the veranda, I heard Partridge enter the dining room.
Can I speak to you a minute, Miss Burton? She said. I am very sorry that someone called me on your telephone. The young person who did it should have known better, because Agnes used to work here. She was only 16 then, but she hasn't got a mother or any family. And that's why I'm asking if you would allow her to come here to tea with me this afternoon. It's her day off, you see, and she's worried about something and wants to talk to me about it.
Joanna said,
But why shouldn't she come to tea with you?
Partridge stood up very straight as she replied,
It has never been allowed in this house, miss.
It's no good, Joanna, I said when Partridge had gone and my sister had come outside. Your sympathy is not welcome. You are not respected for it. Joanna said,
Oh, I'm a complete failure today, with Amy for knowing nothing about vegetables, and with Partridge for being a human.
Then Megan, who was now standing in the middle of the lawn, came back towards us and said,
I must go home now.
What? I said. She went on,
It's been very good of you to have me, and I have enjoyed it, but I must go back because, well, it's my home, and I can't stay away forever, so I think I'll go this morning.
Both Joanna and I tried to make her stay, but she was determined. So finally, Joanna got out the car and drove her back to Mr. Symington's house. Part 3. Owen Griffith arrived just before lunchtime, and while the gardener was loading the vegetables into his car, I brought Owen indoors for a drink. He said he wouldn't stay to lunch. When I came into the sitting room with the glasses, I found Joanna on the sofa, asking Owen questions about his work. She said she thought that being a doctor was one of the most interesting jobs in the world. Then she said,
Do change your mind and stay to lunch with us, Dr. Griffith.
And Griffith said that his sister was expecting him.
We'll ring her up and explain, said Joanna,
and went out into the hall. She came back smiling and said that it was all right.
and Owen Griffith stayed to lunch and seemed to enjoy himself. We talked about books and about music and painting. We didn't talk about Limstock at all, or about anonymous letters, or Mrs. Symington's suicide. When he had gone, I said to Joanna, "That fellow's too good for your usual female tricks." Joanna said,
"That's what you always say. What are you men so frightened of?"
Part 4. That afternoon, we were going to tea with Miss Emily Barton at her rooms in the village. We must have got there early, for the door was opened to us by a tall, fierce-looking woman who told us that Miss Barton wasn't in yet.
"But she's expecting you, I know, so if you'll come up and wait, please."
This, obviously, was Miss Barton's former servant, Faithful Florence. We followed her up the stairs, and she showed us into a pleasant sitting room.
"I make her as comfortable as I can," she said, "but she ought to be in her own house."
Joanna said,
"Well, Miss Barton wanted to rent out the house. She went to the house agents."
"Forced into it," said Florence.
And looking hard at us for some moments, she left the room. "We don't seem to be very popular," I said. "Megan gets tired of us. Partridge disapproves of you. Florence disapproves of both of us." Joanna said,
"I wonder why Megan did leave."
"She got bored."
"I don't think she did. Do you think, Jerry, it could have been something that Amy Griffith said?"
I was about to reply that she might easily have upset Megan when the door opened and Miss Emily came in. Her face was pink and she seemed excited. Her eyes were very blue and shining.
"Oh dear, I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just doing a little shopping in the town, and the cakes at the Blue Rose didn't seem to me quite fresh, so I went on to Mrs. Ligon's,"
Joanna said quickly.
"No, Miss Barton, you are not late. We were early. Jerry is walking so fast now that we arrive everywhere too soon." "You could never be too soon, dear. One cannot have too much of a good thing, you know."
Joanna brightened up. At last, it seemed, she was being a success. And then the door opened, and Florence came in with a tray of tea and some little cakes. Joanna and I ate far more than we wanted to, and of course we talked about the people who lived in Limstock. Miss Barton said how kind and clever Dr. Griffith was. Mr. Symington, too, was a very clever lawyer and had helped Miss Barton to get some money back from the income tax. He was so nice to his children, too, and to his wife. She was less sure about Mr. Pye. All she said was that he was very kind and very rich, too. He had very strange visitors sometimes, but then, of course, he had travelled a lot.
"I have often thought I would like to go on a holiday," said Emily Barton.
"Why don't you go?" asked Joanna.
"Oh, no, no. Travelling alone would not be suitable for a lady. Don't you agree?"
"I'm not sure," said Joanna,
and then quickly tried to calm her by asking a question about the Red Cross sale in the village. This led us to talk about Mrs. Dane Calthrop.
"You know, dear," Miss Barton said, "she does say some very strange things sometimes."
I asked what things.
"Oh, very unexpected things. And the way she looks at you, as though you weren't there, but somebody else was. And then she won't, well, do anything. There are so many cases where a vicar's wife could tell people what is right and make them behave better, but she refuses
and she also has a habit of feeling sorry for the most unpleasant people.
That's interesting, I said, looking quickly at Joanna.
But she is very loyal to her husband, who is such a clever man, and such a good man too.
Part 5. At dinner that night, Joanna said to Partridge that she hoped her tea party had been a success. Partridge's face went red.
Thank you, but Agnes didn't come after all.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It didn't matter to me, said Partridge. It wasn't me who asked her.
Perhaps she was ill, Joanna said. Did you phone her to find out?
No, I did not, Partridge replied. If Agnes likes to behave rudely, that's her problem. But I shall tell her exactly what I think when we meet.
And she went out of the room, stiff with hurt pride. Joanna and I laughed, then began talking of the anonymous letters, and wondered how Superintendent Nash and Inspector Graves were getting on.
It's a week today exactly, said Joanna, since Mrs. Symington's suicide. Oh, they must have got onto something by now. Fingerprints, or writing, or something.
But I was thinking about something else, and a strange sense of uneasiness was growing in my mind. It was connected with the phrase that Joanna had used, a week exactly. And Joanna noticed suddenly that I wasn't listening to her.
What's the matter, Jerry?
I did not answer, because my mind was busy putting things together. Mrs. Symington's suicide. She was alone in the house that afternoon. Alone in the house, because the maids were having their day off. A week ago, exactly. Joanna, servants have days off once a week, don't they?
Yes.
I crossed the room and rang the bell. Partridge came in. Tell me, I said, this Agnes Waddle, is she a servant in someone's house?
Yes, sir, at Mr. Symington's.
I looked at the clock. It was 10:30. Would she be back there now, do you think?
Yes, sir. The servants have to be in by 10.
I went out into the hall and picked up the telephone. Joanna and Partridge followed me. Sorry to ring you up, I said when Elsie Holland answered. This is Jerry Burton speaking. Has your servant Agnes come in? Miss Holland sounded very surprised.
Agnes? Oh, of course she'll be in by now.
I felt like a fool, but I went on. Do you mind just checking that she has come in? Luckily, a governess is used to doing things when told. Elsie Holland put down the receiver and went away. 2 minutes later, I heard her voice.
Are you there, Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Agnes isn't in yet.
I knew then that I had been right. I heard a noise of voices from the other end of the line. Then Symington himself spoke.
Hello, Burton. What's the matter?
Your servant Agnes isn't back yet.
No. There's not been an accident, has there?
Not an accident, I said.
Do you mean you think something has happened to the girl?
I shouldn't be surprised, I told him.